You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Welcome to another edition of the Stardom Road Podcast here on the Count Podcast Network. I'm your host, as always, Scott Edwards, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Trent Brewer. Trent, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty well. We're in the middle of the Queen's Quest story, which means we're not at the doldrums yet. We're not at the sad point yet. We're still good times ahead. There's still happy moments ahead, which means I'm in a good mood. Yeah, we don't need to be sad yet. There's still some plenty of good things to cover. For many people, this is the era of Queen's Quest that they remember better than any. If we get any facts wrong, if there's things we mentioned that aren't true, we are going to be called out on it. So we need to be on our A game here. No B-plus players today.
I am always on my A game. Totally. Good. The good news for us is I remember a lot of this just from personal experience. And, you know, Queen's Quest carries a lot of heights, like a lot of great times. And, you know, we'll talk about a lot of them in this episode. This is the longest era, per se. We're going to talk about a lot of wins. We're going to talk about victories. And, of course, this is the Momo Watanabe era of Queen's Quest, her leadership. Until, of course, she broke my heart and joined Oedo Tai.
Not just your heart. Several hearts and at least one person's
okay, head. There's two of us here. I'm going with my heart on this one. I'm still upset about it, but that's a conversation for another day. Actually, no. It's probably just a conversation for later, truthfully.
For about 50 minutes time.
Yeah, so we'll see you then. But we will start at the beginning, of course. But before we kind of do all the dates and whatnot. The Momo Watanabe era of Queen's Quest, they were able to capture the, as you like to call it, the cool kids aura, and they really brought it up right by the end when it was just Momo, Azumi, Sayaka Tani, and Utami Hayashishita. There was no one cooler around in terms of just general feel, right? Now, they had some competition with DDM, of course, which by the end of it, of who's cooler, but
they weren't kids.
No. But with masks and with the jackets and with the dominance, they were always at the top of the line. But let's get to it. We're not gonna hold you. We're gonna get right to it, and we're gonna start.
We don't have time to hold you with this, Sarah.
No, exactly. So we're going to go to the end of the EO era, as we stopped with last episode. If you haven't listened to it, go check it out. It's better to kind of get the full story. And that's when, of course, Momo Watanabe takes over as leader of Queen's Quest. She had beat EO Shirai for the Wonder of Stardom Championship after winning the Cinderella Tournament, and that would help serve as the passing of the leadership from, of course, one of the all-time greats in EO to someone in Momo Watanabe who is being positioned as the future ace of the company. And that, of course, comes with the record-breaking Wonder of Stardom title reign.
It's, I think it's important, like, just to give people an idea, because obviously, like, you might be coming from the last episode, in which case fantastic. If you haven't come from that episode, go and listen to that. But like, if you're listening as the episodes are dropping, it's been 2 weeks, and if you are like me, you don't have the best memory. So let's just give you a quick refresher. Here's how Queen's Quest stand as of the time Io Shirai leaves. So you've got Momo Watanabe, who is the leader. You've got Azumi, who is the real leader. Don't listen to what we're saying. You've got Viper, who is the SWA champion, which we didn't mention on last the last episode, but she did actually win it towards the end of that run. You've got Bea Priestley, who joined during the Stardom draft. You've got Chardonnay, who joined during the last Stardom draft. Don't expect to hear her name mentioned too much during this period. And you also get Konami, who joined during the Stardom draft as well. So Queen's Quest undergoes quite a drastic change over these past couple of months as Io Shirai is sort of hanging up the Stardom boots. Not only do we get a new leader, but you're getting a very different look for Queen's Quest. You've got a lot of new members, a new leader, some championships have shuffled around. So there's a lot of pressure on Momo coming in here as a teenager, as an 18-year-old, now as a young champion, and not just any old champion, a Wonder of Stardom champion, now having to not only lead this company as a champion, but lead a faction with foreigners, with up-and-coming wrestlers looking for guidance and stuff. There's a lot of pressure here on Momo to step forward. And, I mean, in hindsight, I think we can all say fantastic job in both as champion as faction leader in this first year. Tremendous work.
When you consider her age, when you consider how much was put on her plate to go forward, right? You know, we've talked about Stardom at that time, and you know, post EO, what does that look like? We give a lot of credit to a lot of people throughout 2019, especially, right? Momo deserves so much credit for where Stardom got to, because she did a lot of the heavy lifting. Many times she was main eventing the shows, many times she was having the best match on shows as the Wonder Stardom champion. We'll get to some of those defenses just briefly here. You know, that's another episode. We have a Wonder Stardom title reign to dive into once somewhere down the line. But, you know, you look at some of the matches with, you know, of course, Jungle Kiona, some of the most legendary matches in Stardom history are from this reign.
Yes.
At the same time, she's rebuilding Queen's Quest in a way in her image, while also keeping the idea that EO left, right? There's a lot of having to figure it out, and the fact that she's able to figure it out at this age is why I think, you know, we sit here in 2024 and people still want so much more for Momo, because they saw she can do it. Right. Yes. They saw she could do it at an age that few people are like even wrestling at, let alone competing at a top level. And I think that's why this era is so much fun at the same time. Obviously, Queen's Quest gets to the point of having just this super team. It feels like a four, but it took a lot to get there. You know,
this isn't the super team Queen's Quest that a lot of people envision for the Momo Watanabe era. Yes. As we mentioned, this is not the super strong team. You've got obviously Azumi in June 2018 is not the Azumi we know. Viper is obviously a strong addition, but Bea Priestley this time is still finding her way. Chardonnay is not exactly an S tier wrestler, and Konami even at this point isn't top tier. She's still finding her way. But just to give you an idea of how well Momo takes the ball and runs with it. Here's what she does between the time she sort of wins the belt and EO's leaving to the five-star Grand Prix, which is sort of 2 months later in August. So she defends the belt four times during this period. She defends it on EO's retirement show against Jungle Kiona. She then defends it against Deonna Purrazzo five days later on the 23rd. She defends it against Suzuki, who, remember, recently left Queen's Quest to join Oedo Tai as part of the Stardom draft on the 16th of July, and then defends it against Saki Kashima on the 12th of August. Also during this period, she has an unsuccessful challenge of the Goddess of Stardom Championship belts with Konami against Mayu Iwatani and Saki Kashima. So during these 2 months, she is just going hell for leather, gung-ho, establishing herself all of a sudden as one of the main players in Stardom, which when you have a massive gap at the top of the card, when someone like Io Shirai leaves, this is exactly what you're looking for someone to do. And that's what Momo does. Hang on what you need. It's almost like when Io's left, she's like, this is what you need to do. Just insert yourself into every opportunity, defend the belt as much as you can, get your name out there. And instantly, and it's perfect timing because you've got a force of nature about to debut. And I don't think any of us expected what Utami was about to do, but like she needed to get her name out there as quickly as she did, just to remind everyone before Utami debuted, she's the real deal. And here you go. By the time the five-star Grand Prix rolls around, everyone's talking about Momo Watanabe.
Yeah, she's the talk of the company in many ways. She feels like the top star moving forward. And you have to think that there was a game plan there, not only with, you know, Momo and Rossi, but even when Io was walking out. You know, Io is the one that watched Momo grow and helped Momo grow. There was a reason she was put in this position, and she was succeeding. But we have to let this group grow, right? You know, from Momo Watanabe, Azumi, Viper, Bea Priestley, Chardonnay, and Konami, it needed that next number two, right? Yeah. That true number two. And while someone else in this group would become World of Stardom champion over the next year, this was about Utami Hayashishita. And that, of course, starts on August 26th when Momo and Utami team up for the very first time, winning a four-way tag team match. And that's when Momo had started to hint maybe Queen's Quest would be right for Utami. As you know, if you listen to the big rookie episode, as we talked about Utami, you know what the dominance is going to be like. You know what Utami ends up doing over that first year. And joining Queen's Quest is a big part of that, right? It's not only Momo getting pushed, it's a group push.
Yes.
And Utami ends up being a big part of that. So we will fast forward to September 30th. Goddess of Stardom Tag League begins. Utami and Momo are back together, this time for the tournament. And after they win the match, Utami states, and I quote, "Just because I want to be your partner, I'm not in Queen's Quest, but let's do our best together." So already an interesting, like, okay. Mm. But when you are grouped with essentially the new ace in a tag league tournament, you can start to figure out what is coming down the pipeline here.
Yes.
So Momo tries to get her to do the Queen's Quest hand symbol, of course, everyone knows, but she just shakes her hand. Just the continued push off, right? We're building a story here. We're not just going to do it all at once. Well, who would do that with a faction, right? We just do it all at once and form a new faction with five people out of nowhere. We wouldn't do that back then. There's story to be had. So Azumi and Konami and Bea Priestley and Chardonnay are also all teamed up within this tournament. Momo defended her white belt once again in a title versus title match with Kagetsu at the time, which was a doubleheader show. Notably, I think this is important. Neither one, clearly, as the world knows, there's only ever been two double champs. That was not Momo at this time, but it, again, furthers Momo along. Momo's not losing to Kagetsu. They're going to a double knockout draw. Right. They are equals. And this is the conversation. This isn't the conversation we're having today. But when you look at that, that's why people say the Wonder and World are on the same level in some ways. This was treated back then as equals. Maybe not so much now in present day. I don't really know where those two are going. I mean, present day, it's not even on someone in Stardom, but that's besides the point. But September 3rd was
very important. We need to see how the new management are going to treat these belts, because it is like, we don't know how they're going to envision it, but during this period, and really for most of the run under Rossi Ogawa, these were belts were not seen as one and two. They were 1A and 1B.
So, importantly, very important, Utami and Momo, they're teamed together. Utami doesn't want to agree yet. You know, they're just a good team. They're such a good team that they win the Goddess of Stardom Tag League. And it's like, oh, you know, maybe there's a little more to this than just them being a great, good tag team. And I think it's very important. This tag run overall, starting back on September 30th, it sets the stage for Queen's Quest as you know it in the Momo era in many, many ways, right? This duo is what leads them forward for ultimately until the very end, you know? Like, ultimately, there is involvement with one of these two until the very end, as we've talked about. And I know Queen's Quest still exists, technically, but you know what I'm saying, okay? But let's get to November 23rd. November 23rd is a very important day as Momo and Utami team up and defeat Jungle Kiona and Natsuko Tora. Wow, Momo Watanabe defeated Jungle Kiona. I feel like I've read that a few times. Trent,
I mean, you could bring up Momo beating Jungle or Utami beating Jungle. Like, we've read that a lot. Both of those things, we've read that a lot.
You make a good point.
It's poison.
But this, again, pushes Momo to a new height. She now becomes a double champion, and after winning the titles, Utami Hayashishita finally joins Queen's Quest on an official basis, giving them their new number two in the long term. Yes, you may be listening to this. If you didn't listen to the big rookie episode, you should. But you're like, wait a minute, this is rookie Utami? Yes, she was number two as soon as she joined that group. I will not hear otherwise. You know, especially when we had a lot of international stars in there. When you look at the Japanese-based talent, of course, it's Utami. Because, of course, Utami then goes on to win a million gazillion titles, the greatest picture of all times, where she just, like, is trying to hold them all, doing the Ultimo Guerrero picture. Not Ultimo Guerrero, sorry. Ultimo Drag. Sorry, I've been watching too much CML lately. My apologies. Big pop, though. So this is how the conversation went. Utami said, I won and became a champion today, so it was okay for me to say something. I want to join Queen's Quest, which is very funny that she's like, I want to join Queen's Quest. Yeah, well, guess what? They invited you like two, three months ago. You could just accept it then, but it's fine.
Something else might be off the table. You know, she kept them waiting.
It's true. The best part of this, though, is Momo says, of course, but first let's ask the leader. Azumi says, I'm the commander of Queen's Quest. I'm the commander, and that's why you won today. Utami wants to join Queen's Quest. I'm not going to decide. The fans will decide. That's very, like, WWE-ism. It's like, let's play. You know, points the microphone to the fans. Thankfully, they did make noise. There's times that doesn't work out. So there's cheers and applause. There you have it. And she was in Queen's Quest.
I will also point out, Azumi, the commander here, the reason that Utami and Momo won the Goddess of Stardom Tag League, Konami and Azumi, who are in the tournament, they got 4 points. So. Yes. Maybe she should have commanded her team to win some more matches, but anyways.
For anyone
the confused, other Queen's Quest team also made the finals. Just
That's true.
Yeah.
That's very true. Very important, honestly. Again, showing the dominance of the group and where they were going, right? They're dominating tag league. And as noted in our notes here, this would mark Utami's first title. 3 months after her debut, she would never go on to win another title. That was a Trent special, everybody. Not much success after that.
You'd never hear her name again.
No success whatsoever.
And then what happens in the notes? I proceed to list like the next three things of all her winning like championships and accolades.
Yeah, the next two important dates in Queen's Quest history. Actually, sorry, four dates. the next four. So December 2nd, Utami wins the Rookie of Stardom 2018 Final Gauntlet, defeating Hina, Rina, and Natsumi. A lot of challenge there. She's a little.
There was even money on her winning that tournament.
Then January 3rd, 2019, Utami defeated Starlight Kid to win the Future of Stardom Champion, making her a double champion. But that's not all. We don't stop there. Utami, Viper, and B won a one-day trios tournament. The other Queen's Quest of Momo, Azumi, and Konami were knocked down in the first round by Arisa, Shiki, Saki Kashima, and Tam Nakano. I think it's worth noting, while the tournaments aren't titles, it just, again, puts the point out there. It didn't matter if it was a tournament. It didn't matter. Like, it was all in on Utami, no matter what. And you know,
no one making up things for her to win.
Right, which is like unbelievable in a way. But there's a reason she feels like such a big star now. And this is part of the Queen's Quest story. You push someone and you get behind someone like that. They feel like the biggest deal in the world. You know, I mean, she wasn't in Queen's Quest yet. She was in the 5-star finals too. Like, okay. Yeah. You know, it's like unbelievable. We are going to make this woman the biggest star in the world. And as we talk about this, who is she wrestling this weekend? Io Sky. So like, you see the point here. Debatably, yeah. But that wasn't all. We have more gold for Utami. I love the picture. I love the Baltimo Guerrero. we have fun here. January 14th, Utami defeats fellow Queen's Quest member Viper to win not only the SWA championship, but also the EVE International Championship, the title you may know that you has and will never lose again. Making her quadruple champion 5 months into her career. Trent, you have many favorites in wrestling, right?
Kind of defeats the point of it being a favorite.
But you have many favorite wrestlers through the years.
Yes.
Has any of them been quadruple champion?
I normally like wrestlers who fail, as we've discussed earlier with Jungle Kiona.
Did she win 5 titles in her career? Sorry, 4.
Do we count the ones that she wins multiple times? Because she won the goddess title multiple times.
See, different titles, so it's, you know, it's insane, right?
She won four multiple titles.
I think you lied in your note, by the way. You said she'd never go on to win a title again. We've had 3 since.
I may have miscalculated on my, I write chronologically, and then I forgot to go back and edit that.
So a key note here with that Viper win, you see Queen's Quest fight each other a lot. That is one important note, I think, through the Momo era into the Utami era. When titles are had in this group, there's never really a reason to shy away from them facing off. And obviously that's a big stardom thing, but there's a reason this group became the best of the best in many ways in people's eyes. They were willing to be the best of the best at the top of the card, whether it's with each other or against each other. And that brings us, of course, to April 5th, Momo Watanabe defending the Wonder of Stardom Championship against Utami Hayashishita. This would mark Momo's last successful defense of the Wonder of Stardom Championship. And Utami would have to take the next 2 months off due to injury. Is that why she lost the title? Because Utami wasn't there to protect her? No, it's not.
Or because she hurt the golden egg.
There was this shining star. Oh my God, that's a hell of a thought to think about. The shining star was blazing through, and that's why. But it's important because this is another big opportunity for Utami, and obviously she came up short here. She came up short again the next year for the Wonder, but by the end of 2020, she was not coming up short in big title matches anymore. She had to lose all the other ones. It wasn't all glory. It's mostly glory. Don't get me wrong. Especially through the Momo era. Like, Utami's glory comes through that era because she won one title when she was leader? Yeah. One.
Yes. 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 Yeah.
And then she left. She had enough of this booking. Why am I not winning titles?
She was better as the number two when she could just focus on being the ace rather than the leader, which is kind of, you know, it's a fitting kind of story in a lot of ways because, you kind of see that with Sayaka Mitani, arguably, as well. When she was able to focus on just being the best wrestler she could be, she has that historic white belt reign, which we'll get to later on in the next episode. This is kind of fitting. Like, you know, Utami is running roughshod on the company until she comes up against the leader of Queen's Quest, which was the case for a lot of wrestlers. You know, as good as they are, they go up against Momo when she's firing on all cylinders. She comes up short. You know, this is just how good, how dominant Momo is at this time. Even Utami can't beat her right now.
Tough, though, because she, you know, lose not so much. It wouldn't be too long until she did lose, but yeah. It was the pinnacle of it. It was the final, you know, the final defense. The record was set. Momo's run as Wonder Stardom champion, before we kind of, you know, eventually move on from it here, because of course she'd soon lose after, which we'll talk about, obviously, which is important. But that reign sets the, it helps Momo a lot, obviously. But again, when you lose Io Shirai, you need someone to not only take a step up for a group, but the company itself, and she was more than willing to do that. It's Momo's run is a very interesting topic if you look at how domestic fans reacted, how international fans reacted. It's very different. It wasn't always, oh, this is the greatest run ever. You know, some people didn't love Momo on top the full time. And, you know, maybe, and certain things, of course, have led to her not reaching the mountaintop again, right? After the record-breaking Wonder Stardom title reign, which ended in 2019. If you told someone then that she wouldn't have held the World of Stardom title within the next 5 years, I think people would have a hard time believing that. And we're getting to a point now where it's like, will she ever actually hold that belt? I'm not too sure. Which is a shame to look back on. I think that's the one thing when I look back at the Queen's Quest era of Momo, I do get sad, because she was on top of the world and she was always like that wrestler you counted on for the great match. And, you know, you see it in the 5-star, for this example. You see it in Utami's title reign, which we'll talk about, right? Who was the first challenger to give her the great match? That was Momo Watanabe.
Something gets lost from this point moving forward, because when she was white belt champion, she was finding something. And look, she stepped up when Stardom needed her to. And in all of this, like we talk about, obviously with Io gone, she steps up. But there's another important thing to remember too, is because not long after when Io goes, Mayu gets injured. Mm-hmm. So not only is Io gone, but the person that was meant to be stepping up and leading Stardom forward is now gone as well.
Yeah.
So Momo's thrust even further into that point of spotlight, with Mayu out of the picture and unable to step forward as the champion, and, you know, Tony Storm was meant to be leading forward and stuff. It's actually, never mind, because that's a different time period. I'm getting confused. But, like, you know, it's Mayu wasn't leading the company during this period when you thought she would be. It's Getsu leading it a little bit. Mayu's doing her thing as well. But, like, Momo steps forward when you would have expected her to be just a bit player. You know, she jumps the queue in a lot of ways, which shows how hungry she was. And then, like, it's almost like after the white belt run, you're thinking, okay, she's going to step back for a couple of months. She's going to recover. She's going to, you know, take a breath, and then she's going to come and storm back through. And it just never happened. And for whatever reason, we don't know what happens there. It just never seems to come to fruition, which is a real shame. You can talk about why that was. You can say it was a management decision. You can say she just never had that hunger. It's an interesting debate. I'm looking forward to going through the white belt discussion in the future, because that's going to be a multi-episode piece. There's a lot to talk about there. We've only scratched the surface on this episode because it's not the focus. But it's been a tremendous, it is truly one of the great title runs in all of Stardom history.
Absolutely. It's, if you were to make a top five, it's in the discussion easily. Not just because of the length of the reign. There is a lot of importance to that reign. As we talked about, right, with the world tier list, the World of Stardom tier list, there was a lot of importance when it comes to that Wonder, and hers might have been the most important. But let's talk about Queen's Quest more here. Move on to April 13th. The Queen's Quest trio of Momo, Azumi, and Konami defeated Oedo Tai, Kagetsu, Hazuki, and Natsu Sumire in a 2 out of 3 falls match, breaking everyone's hearts because Oedo Tai can no longer do their dance. Queen's Quest saved their masks.
Mm-hmm.
The signature mask that everyone loves, for good reason. They did save them, and I think that's very important, obviously, because what's Queen's Quest remember for? The masks, the jackets. Yeah. Obviously, the masks have disappeared in recent years, but important spot nonetheless. But this is where it really gets important. We start to really take shape of Queen's Quest moving forward. So April 14th, as many know, the Stardom draft took place. Mo Watanabe would earn the right to draft second. For everyone that doesn't know, the Stardom draft is a reset for the factions. The only people staying in the factions are the leaders. Everyone else is available to be picked. That's very important. That's why there is a complete shakeup. That is how, you know, Tokyo Cyber Squad comes to be. That is how all these important things, which, again, you know, many people have brought up through the years since then, like, oh, maybe this would be a good time for the Stardom draft. I think Stardom has now gotten to the point where it's so big, it's almost impossible to do it. But we got so stale recently, I was like, you know what, just do it. But there's been a lot of shakeup.
It's an easy way to do a lot of changes quickly. The downside is you don't do organic stories with them. So there's positives and negatives to both. But I think sometimes if you're looking to just do mass change at the click of a finger, there is a certain benefit to it. So you could make the argument in like a Queen's Quest gone situation, it's not the worst idea. But if you want Queen's Quest to be a one-person army for a while, you can't really do it and then have Saikam Tani not pick. So.
So Momo would make sure that top trio remained, picking Azumi with her first pick, then following up with Tommy with the second, which is just very funny to think about because, you know, Tommy had so much gold and all that, and no offense to Azumi, but Azumi's a commander. You can't lose a commander, obviously. Yeah. And again, this is where my frustration comes in of how we don't get to talk about an Azumi era of Queen's Quest. Like, she was always there. She was always an important part of whatever.
Every era is the Azumi era.
This is true. In doing so, it left Konami vulnerable, which was, of course, drafted by Hanakamura to form Tokyo Cyber Squad. That marked the real big exit for that group. Of course, Konami would go on to become a big-time player as part of Tokyo Cyber Squad, as she'd hit two finals that year, tournament-wise. That was the only member of the Queen's Quest faction at the time heading into that would be lost. They would acquire Hina, who of course had been with the group up until recently, and Leon Ozaki, Born to Beat You. Tough, you know, because never did. However, both Viper and Chardonnay would be redrafted by Momo, but never actually wrestle for Queen's Quest again. So that would bring us to this now being Queen's Quest. Momo Watanabe, Azumi, Utami Hayashishita, Bea Priestley, Leo Ozaki, and Hina. You know, people may have their thoughts about Bea Priestley. She won the World of Stardom title literally less than a month later. What a valuable draft pick.
Yeah, you want to talk about late sort of order steals? It's a pretty good pick.
Yeah, so Bea Priestley would defeat Kagetsu to become the World of Stardom champion, bringing back the red belt under Queen's Quest control for the first time since Io had held it back June 21st, 2017. It's interesting because right when Utami had become World of Stardom, and we'll get to this a little bit since we're here at B, we'll talk about it. When Utami became World of Stardom champion, there felt like a slight shift, right? Like when, you know, when Queen's Quest showed up, Momo was the leader, but Utami felt like the 1B to the 1A. B never felt like that. Never.
No. And we kind of talked about it in our red belt sort of rankings tier list, which we did a month back now. Bea Priestley never really reached that level of feeling like the top champion, and that was something we kind of knocked her for. It just always felt like she was given the belt and never reached the the heights that the belt would expect of you. Fair effort, you know, you kind of saw what they were trying to do with it, just never, it always felt a little bit out of left center. Felt like it was meant to be a defense for Kagetsu, and then it was like, oh, he's got the title. Cool, what are we doing now? Like, when Itami won, it was like, oh, yeah, no, this is totally expected. We saw this coming a mile away, because basically from the moment Itami stepped foot, it's like, okay, start the clock until she wins the red belt.
I like to joke and say, what took so long? You know, she won every other belt. It took you long enough. So on May 16th, so just 12 days later, the 358-day reign of Momo Watanabe would come to an end. As Risho Tsuchiki shouts out, big important clap, ended the reign, week shy of a year as champion. It was at the time the record-setting reign, of course, which Saya Kamatani, Queen's Quest member, and current leader, technically, would break. The successful defense record was set at 13 and wasn't surpassed until Saya got it. Fun fact. It's a fun fact. Yes, thank you. Which I think is, again, incredible in many ways. Like, just thinking Momo sets that record. And, you know, I don't know. I didn't get to ask Rossi this, and I don't think Rossi would tell me if I got to ask him anyways. But, like, did he always want to just keep the record within the Queen's Quest faction? Was that his plan? You know, just...
I presume not, considering Arisa got cut short. To specify, the fun fact, which you never actually finished, was the third spot. Because Sai's number one, number two is Momo, number three is tied with number...
Sorry, yeah, fun number fact three. Pop me, okay?
Yeah, Io Shirai is technically tied for third spot, who was also the Queen's Quest leader, at 10 defenses, along with Arisa Hoshiki. The fact she's there kind of ruins a little bit, but technically the top three are Queen's Quest.
If it matters, I think Arisa's defense reign... was pretty close to being over at that time anyway, so
yeah, but technically, like,
I'm just saying Julia would have beat her, that's all I'm saying. You know, like, we weren't hiding that, you know.
I still think it's possible Tam was going to be the one to win it, so it's, you know, perfect world if Hana and, you know, Arisa were still sticking around, it may have changed things.
More gold was lost from Queen's Quest soon after. Yep. June 30th, Itami lost the EVE International title to Jamie Hayter, tragically making her only a triple champion. But, you know, lots of gold. I'm not... Okay. I need everyone to know. I'm breaking the fourth wall here. Trent writes up notes. And we like to go, and I go through them, obviously, because we need the dates. And sometimes I read what he writes, but I read ahead as I'm reading it. And he makes some terrible jokes that only he should be reading, not me. Because it feels like one of those things when you get cue cards that you don't know about. And, you're reading, and people are like, that's how I feel. So, yeah, Trent, I'll let you have this one. Go ahead, read it.
Okay. Thank you. And I've got to find my spot now, because I'm following along just listening to you. I'm enjoying listening to you talk about. So where are we? Here we go. So June 30, Itami loses the title. This would not be the last time she'd lose a title to her, making her a Jamie Hayter. I'm pretty happy with that. I like that joke. It's a fun joke.
Here's what I do. Do the next one, too. Because there's just more attacks on Itami at this point.
Okay, July 15th, Momo and Itami lose the Goddess of Titles to Jungle Kyona and Konami of Tokyo Cyber Squad. Itami is now just a pathetic double champion. She's bleeding titles left, right, and center. It's worrying. Like, if this was a quote-unquote real sport, you would be asking questions about what's going on here.
Anyways, so about the Queen's Quest being at the top.
Before we move on, who won the title? Jungle Kyona won the title.
You already said that.
I don't get many chances to celebrate a Jungle Kyona victory, so.
That's true. Never a singles one. You lined it up and I hit it out of the park. You're welcome. Bea Priestley defeated Momo in a red belt challenge. So again, Queen's Quest at the top, challenging from within, continuously goes. And again, I say that is a Stardom thing, but it's notable because it wasn't just Momo. Utami also challenged on August 10th, both coming up short. And as you note here, Bea Priestley made her AEW debut earlier in July, teaming with Shoko Nakajima. And then Rossi never worked with Tony Khan again. Crazy how that works. I had to make the joke. I'm sorry. I had to. It's just like you take your World of Stardom champion. It's like, oh, interesting.
It does hint at that. You know, this is around like, it gives context to this is the time period we're in, you know, B. Priestley starting to not necessarily look elsewhere, but like it's not too far away that she would leave Stardom to incidentally not work AEW, work WWE. But like this is the period we're getting at where AEW is looming, WWE is looming, and your foreign talent is starting to look elsewhere. And maybe not too long, and still not just our foreign talent is starting to look elsewhere, but that's for another topic.
Next important date is very it's very meaningful to me because Stardom was saved. Mayu Iwatani defeated Bea Priestley to win the World of Stardom Championship on November 4th, leaving Queen's Quest feel a little empty. No more top champion. First time in a long time. The Wonder or World was not in the group. Since what? 2017?
Pretty much, yeah.
Because it went from Io to Momo, and then B had the belt, then Momo. Yeah, that's a long time. Yeah. We're at the end of 2019 here, folks. and that same kind of thing happens again not soon after, right? So just wanted to point that out. But Gold would come back around because Queen's Quest during this time always had themselves some gold.
Not just any gold.
One of the super trios, we didn't get every super trio to win Queen's Quest gold. Staring at the camera for a second, just to say, how the hell did Utami, Sai, and Azumi never win the belts? Yeah, the Cosmic Angels, Reign of Terror instead. Great. Awesome. The Reign of Terror. It's not even like it was the Work Rate Angels. It was Unagi all the time. And Mina all the time. Sorry. They defeated Ueo Taisa Kagetsu and Dress Miyagi and Natsusumi.
Makes Utami a double champion. No, you're double champion again because she's still got the future title at this stage.
Yeah, she did. Just, it was a nice accessory for her. It was like a title that's like, I guess I'll hold it, you know? Which is very funny to think about because, like, think of what the future title has actually become. You know, Utami didn't defend this belt all that much, but she did defend it at the beginning of 2020 against someone named Micah in Just Tap Out. You may have heard of her.
Actually, I've got to fact check myself. She's a triple champion at this point because she's still got the SWA championship.
Oh, my God. This is why. Yeah, I was going to say, didn't Jamie beat her?
Yeah, Jamie's got to beat her a second time. So, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, folks. Not to break the fourth wall again, but she's a Jamie hater.
Barney Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, askmepeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Here after all.
We there can't we go. That. You leaned into the joke.
I gotcha. Though, to be fair, Tommy would give up the belt. So it kind of defeats the purpose. But let's get to 2020. 2020 is obviously a very tough year for Stardom, but it is the time for something new in Stardom by the very end. So we start in January 2020, January 19th.
Things are looking good for Momo. She's a champion. She's about to challenge for a belt. You know, Queen's Quest is back on the up and up. Things are going well for the leader, right?
No. At the anniversary show, Mayu Iwatani would successfully defend the championship against Momo Watanabe. And after the match, Bea Priestley, the longtime member of Queen's Quest, would, you know, console Momo Watanabe, make sure she's okay, before hitting her with a Kamigoye, detaching to Edo Tai and beginning a year of calling her a show pie. You know, AEW could have just took her. We didn't need her here. I'm just saying, you know, and they kind of did. They signed her to a contract. And then by the time, you know, foreigners could come back to Japan, she no longer had a contract. Pretty interesting how that worked. Fun fact, I saw Bea Priestley live on the second ever AEW show. That's all I got. Got nothing else. I also saw Emi Sakura too, which was cool because at the time I didn't really fully understand like what. I just remember she was doing the Freddie Mercury thing. I was like, all right, yeah, cool. Now I think back to it, I was like, that was pretty cool. I've seen Emi since then, but all right. Thank you for sidetracking.
That gimmick didn't really work with the American crowd.
No, the one where she just beats people up works a lot better. It's a good one. She won the. I just want to put that out, like, you know, Emmy got over when she just started beating the hell out of people and killing Jamie Hayter. I brought it all the way back around. Thank you. Bea Priestley had won the Goddess belts earlier that night on the anniversary show with, you guessed it, Jamie Hayter. Yes. They were interfaction at that point.
First, like the first time that people who were in different factions had won tag belt together, which was one of those things. Like it didn't get the chance to be as confusing as it was because, like, this is at a time when Stardom weren't live streaming Kurikans, so like the news kind of came out, and then people didn't get at least in the West, people didn't get a chance to react to it until the news then came out that Bea had defected. It would have made for a very interesting thing if it kind of could have happened at a time when we were watching the whole thing live. Maybe people would have worked out pretty quickly, hang on, I think something's going to go down, but still. An interesting little fun fact for a moment that they briefly were held by different factions.
It was a really sad month in Queen's Quest times. So you got Momo coming up short against Mayu, then B turns, and then Jamie Hayter takes the SWA title from Utami Hayashishida, completing the Jamie Hayter Utami evolvement. You're welcome. I did it again. Jamie Hayter, not Jamie Hayter. Can get confusing. I could see why. I didn't really help change.
You can see the why.
More gold was to be lost on February 8th as Momo, Utami, and Azumi lost the artist belts to the next big faction in Stardom that kind of took over as Trent liked to say, the cool kids on the block. And then you're going to say they weren't kids. Well, you know what? Mike, a challenge for the future, like a month earlier. So bite me. Okay.
They're all older. Like, Queen's Quest progressively got older as they added members because, Utami was older than everyone. And then Saika Matani, who, spoiler coming in, is all older than them all as well.
You know, listen, I think we've already gone too deep with the Queen, not the Queen's Quest, that's the entire point of the episode, with the cool kids thing. But what I will say is we did get a funny comment from @SnapWilson316. I say 316 because I'm thinking it's like Stone Cold. I don't know if that's actually the purpose.
Shout out to SnapWilson316. I'm pretty sure that's what he means.
That, yeah, you know what? SnapWilson316. Maybe that's more.
316.
Anyways,
saying his age.
The comment was good. It was, this makes me realize that it was probably good to bring Queen's Quest to an end, or at least a severe remodeling. They haven't been the cool kids for a while, and now with Suzu, May, SLK all buddying up, there's no question who the cool kids are now. A little hurtful on Azumi there.
just and saying. Miyu Amasaki, who apparently is not cool.
She's the only kid, too. She's the youngest one. She's 19 or whatever.
Miyu Amasaki. They're all the same age. They're 02 line.
Oh, duh. Wait, who am I thinking of? Oh,
funny. I don't know who you're thinking of.
I don't know who I'm thinking of. That's embarrassing. Actually, they're not all the same age.
Starlight Kid is the oldest person in that group.
I was going to say, Starlight Kid actually ruins that. She's not 02, she's 01, so it's tough. Yeah.
She's the grandma. That's why she wears the mask to hold all the wrinkles.
Who was I thinking was 19? I don't know. Wrestling ages are messing me up. Maybe. Yeah, that makes more sense. It clicks. Hana in that group. No, I don't need her to take more pins. Never mind. I also don't want her to leave Stars. All right, whatever. We've gone off track.
I guess technically the O2 line haven't joined yet. They're going to join, but they haven't joined yet.
That's true. As of this conversation, they have not joined. So you're right. Those are the only three together. You know what? You got it.
They are cool.
Yeah, they are cool. They are very cool.
And compared to us, they are kids.
Hurtful. I'm like 2-3 years older than Starlight Kid, but hurtful.
And you know, what would Rena say? You're a grandpa.
That's true. Shout out Rena. She's cool. Anyways, back on track to Queen's Quest. February 16th.
Thank you, Snap Wilson, 316.
We nailed all the numbers. Good job. February 16th, sadness. Sadness clicked in as Leo Anazaki retired despite being born to beat you, subsequently leaving an irreplaceable hole in Queen's Quest.
Made noticeable by the fact that we mentioned her 0 times since she joined.
You can't even imagine who they said, oh, Leo Onozaki's out of the group, we got to replace her with. I think it's an all-time parallel move. You know, there was no, you know, this, we don't know what Leo Onozaki was going to be. You know, people don't talk about that enough.
She was practicing her Phoenix Splashes in the dojo.
Maybe that was going to be her future. But we'll never know. So that same day, Utami defeated Saya Kamitani in a future Stardom title match. This would also be Utami's last defense of the title. And then asked Saya Kamitani to join the group afterward. Would that work out? Utami said, also today in Queen's Quest, Leo retired. On top of that, we were just betrayed by the top gaijin. Not that big of a loss. I want Queen's Quest back. Not as big a loss as Leo Onozaki. I want Queen's Quest back at the top of Stardom. We've still got members, but maybe it's not enough. So Kamitani, how about joining Queen's Quest? Saya responded with, I've been trying to follow in Tommy-san's footsteps since I was a trainee. Oh, it didn't end. That didn't end. She did it when she was a trainee. She did it when Utami left the company. It never ended. She's still doing it. She's wearing red now. I'm sorry. If it's okay with Utami-san, please let me enter Queen's Quest. She literally asked you to join. What? You don't have to say please. She literally asked you. You just had to say, okay. Saya Kamitani story is great. Because Saya Kamitani is in the most one-sided relationship of all time. Utami has left this poor girl on red so many times, and yet here she is, still trying to be Utami.
I will point out, while she's asking to join, Utami's on her phone texting Riho.
Oh, we have fun here. The whole faction rushed to hug, and Utami remembers she's not the boss. This is a great moment. This is just an all-time moment, really.
It's important because, you know, they remember, oh, that's right, we've got to check with Azumi.
And reminding everybody that Saya Kamatani just has been trying to be Utami her entire career, I think is very important. So she asked Azumi, of course, if it was okay. Azumi, of course, the commander of Queen's Quest. You got to do it. Importantly, Momo had zero say in all of this, which is tough. You know, this is the Momo Watanabe era of Queen's Quest, and it didn't matter. Saya Kamatani then tried to make a play to get Itsuki Hoshino, her fellow rookie who had risen up with her through Stardom Idols, to join Queen's Quest. Hoshino wanted to join Stars instead, which pleases Tam greatly.
I think the Stardom Idol story, like, that's kind of that's an episode in of itself that I think we can dive into one day, like, because it is such an absurd little side story in the world of Stardom around this time. It gives us Saya Kamatani, and for that alone, it's such a big deal in the Stardom mythos. But it is such a, you know, sidetrack thing. We see it pop up. If you were following at the time, it felt like a big deal and then immediately kind of fell apart. And you look at kind of what came from it and, you know, the issues with Tam and her manager at the time. It's messy. It's interesting. And if you came into Stardom afterwards, you're probably looking at this going, what the hell is this? Like, you know, we've seen idols in Stardom. Like, you know, obviously Melt here have produced music for Stardom. And Stardom Idols is its own thing. It'll take a little bit of stuff for us to kind of research because there's not a lot of information out there, especially in terms of English-speaking information. But I think it's worth covering at some point. Just bear with us because it's not as fun to cover as, like, going back through Queen's Quest. But we'll touch on it at some point, if just to sort of talk about the two wrestlers that actually come from it. But I think, the Stardom Idols produce shows are still on Stardom World. So for that alone, you can kind of go on there around this time period and see what became of it. There are some interesting faces that pop up on those shows. That's all I'm going to say. If you weren't around during that time, if you watch them, you'll go, oh, I recognize that person. I didn't expect to see them on that show. That's all I'm going to say.
It'll be a fun
time. And Tam was obviously an integral part. That's why she was, like, pissed off to see Saya Kamatani leave and, Hoshino stick around.
That's why they have a story and have always had a story, those two. Utami would relinquish the future title, as I noted, because it was time.
Which is just a cruel move. Beats Kamatani and says, I don't want this belt anymore, and just vacates it. Like,
yeah. What other great wrestler would just do that to a belt? Interesting. To the point where it never came back. How's the SWA title again? Tekla wanted that belt so badly. Mayu took it and said, yeah, I'm just going to get rid of it, buddy. Oh, great. That IWGP.
That's why we get the Tekla that gets herself suspended. She's still pissed about that belt.
I can't blame her. She
used the belt as a weapon. That's why.
I think Tekla has her directions wrong, though, because, you know, she's trying to fight idols. Mayu's not an idol. Did she just forget? Whatever.
She knows she can't beat Mayu. She tried.
That's true. Many have, and many have failed. This is not a Mayu episode, but we must have our spin on it. So, as she relinquished the title, the idea was to focus on now the top titles. Would she succeed at that?
Spoilers ahead. Maybe she does.
This did leave her without a title for the first time since her opening 2 months in the entire wrestling business. So that's funny. And hell of a show to wrap up on because, of course, COVID restrictions would affect them moving forward in every which way. And then, of course, till 2023. You know, Stardom, of course, experienced a shutdown and so much would happen in that time. So you got to fast forward really far now. This, of course, remember, you may have forgot the dates. This was February 16th. We are now moving all the way to July 26th when Aphrodite, Utami Hashishita, and Saya Kamatani would win the vacant Goddess tag titles in a match against Jungle Kiona and Konami. Utami beat Jungle again. Interesting. Oh, sorry.
Yes.
Moving on. The titles, of course, were vacated by Bea Priestley and Jamie Hayter, who were stuck in England and unable to defend them. Bea would later return to Stardom, but Jamie would not. Interesting. What a shame.
Tommy ever got a win back.
Would have loved Jamie Hayter to come back. She was great.
She's been great all now. Of COVID getting jacked.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Jamie hasn't wrestled in over a year as of this recording, but the last time she was wrestling, she was great. Would have been cool to see her wrestle one of them. On the same night, July 26th, Azmi would finally, yes, I said finally, win the high-speed championship in a triple threat against Riho and Starlight Kid, the Reign of Terror. Sorry. I'm not going to do it. I won't do it. Riho, of course, with Tommy's love. So that would kind of get Queen's Quest back on track post stoppages and everything that went on in Stardom. This is now Tommy and Sai on top, Azmi on top.
Mm-hmm. All the major players of Queen's Quest winning belts.
And Momo is there. I wonder why she turned. Things are starting to click a little bit as you go through history. If we fast forward to September 19th. Tommy has just his time to rise to the top of Stardom by winning the 5-star Grand Prix, becoming one of their new top stars officially. Obviously, we knew she was going to be a top star, but this is the win to propel her to, we are now going with her as one of our major players. At the time, notably, not everyone was sold on this, but to be fair, they went all in on 2 stars in this 5-star. It was not only Utami who was in that final. Of course, it was the brand new, recently signed Himeka as well in that final. So I just feel like that's pretty important to bring up. Because
she got the Utami push in that, her debut 5-star. She did exactly what Utami did back in 2018, run roughshod over the company and fell short in the final.
Yeah, I will not make any Himeka jokes. She just came back and reffed, and that was fun. There was a fire on the dance floor. On November 8th, Momoas. Now I'm sad.
Well, that was a happy moment.
No, well, it is, but I loved Momoas, and they never won the tag belts. They won the tag league, but never the tag belts. So, spoiler alert, they won the tag league here, but were unable to convert it to tag gold. And, of course, it would be an interfaction match as they would challenge Aphrodite for those belts on the 14th of November, coming up short. Again, I wonder why Momo left the group. 1 day later, Tommy Hayashishita would win the World of Stardom Championship, defeating Mayu Iwatani, officially making her the new future star of this company for years to come. Until 2024, when she would leave. crazy to think about. This was only 4 years ago. And that brings us to the big challenge. It was Utami defending for the first time against one Momo Watanabe. And Momo comes up short. But in doing so, they have this fantastic match that starts to help push Utami forward as the world champion. It's that match that you watch, you're like, okay, we might be on to something here, because Momo gives this fantastic performance, and of course Utami's able to overcome in the end. But she also acknowledged that Momo Watanabe is still the leader of Queen's Quest. See, that type of little thing for me, if I was Momo, would piss me off. like, why do you gotta say that? You know, like, how dare you? Of course I am.
I think it is important though in that situation, because it does, like, there was definitely around this time a tide was turning where people were starting to ask the question, like, because so often people think like the leader of the group is the strongest wrestler, and it's not always like you look at, you know, traditional sports, the best player isn't always the captain of the team. It's you know, often the leader is someone who is just the most mature, able to be the leader, the commander, someone who can kind of control the squad and lead them behind the scenes better. So Momo not necessarily being the one as the top champion, but still leading or quote unquote commanding the team. It does make sense, but just in terms of wrestling factions, so often that gets confused and muddled. No. The problem in this situation is it does still feel very pat on the heady of, it's okay, Momo, I might be holding the top championship. I might be a young prodigy. I might be doing what you used to do, only better, because this is the red belt. It does feel that way a little bit, but at the time, I do think it was, I don't want to say necessary, because what would have been necessary then, Momo going out and kind of reestablishing herself, and she just doesn't do it during this period. But I don't think it was a bad thing necessarily. It's just, as you see, as you go through, as we go through this timeline, it comes at a time when outside of that, tag tournament run, there's not any real highlights for Momo.
Yeah.
If she's a leader, it's coming all behind the scenes. And we as fans just don't see it.
Yeah, there became real conflicts, maybe not in the actual group itself, but from a fan standpoint, because it really did feel like Utami was becoming, like I said, it was 1A to 1B at that point, but she felt a lot more like the 1A at that time. And it would only get more like that, truthfully. Because, Momo wasn't in a high point until towards the end of the year again, which end of 2021, I should say. Yeah.
That you have everyone designating to Azumi with new faction members as the deciding member situation, which is hilarious and we all love and was a fun in joke. But at a certain point, it does kind of undermine Momo as a leader.
It's like how much of it is reality at this point type thing. On December 26th, Bea Priestley and Konami of Oedotai would defeat Aphrodite to take the goddess titles. Hope Aphrodite gets the title back someday. They did. Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Now we're into 2021. 2021 is a major year in Queen's Quest history for every reason imaginable. It starts off with a title loss. Azumi drops the high-speed championship at, I believe this was at All-Star Dream Cinderella. That kicked off the show? Yes. Kicked off the show. And then Utami would successfully retain the World of Stardom Championship against fellow faction member Saya Kamatani in what ultimately served as Saya Kamatani's big breakup match. Which is again important to bring up because just a few months earlier we were talking about how Momo kind of gave Utami that big match as a champion, and now here we are with Utami giving Saya that big match as the challenger. So pretty cool to see this group grow from within through facing each other. I think that's always very important when talking about this era of Queen's Quest.
Like we saw with Bea Priestley's run, and even with Io Shirai to an extent toward the end of her white belt run, giving chances to the fellow faction mates to step up. Utami gives, not necessarily gives title matches to both Momo and Sai, but you get the matches between the faction mates as a chance to, let's see who's the best. And we see it with Donna Del Mondo as well. It's a real sort of battle between the faction mates to see who's the strongest, and that's what EO was always pushing for Queen's Quest, that fight within to see who is number one, to bring the best out of each other in the faction. You can be all buddy-buddy, you can be friends, but the most important thing is who can be the strongest, and being the best version of yourself often comes from, fighting your best friends to be that best version of yourselves.
At Yokohama Dream Cinderella in spring on April 4th, Utami would successfully defend the title against Bea Priestley, who would then announce her departure from the company, setting up a great moment with Bea making amends with both Utami and Momo after all the turning. They had a great moment in the ring that, of course, was a big shock to many, but they also had a great match, if anyone cares. It was a very good match, arguably Bea's best match of her Stardom run. And another match that kind of was a feather in the cap of Utami while she wasn't getting the big main events at the time, right? She had, that was back-to-back shows. She didn't get the main event, and, you know, that's a big topic of conversation, and yada, yada, yada. Just bringing it up. We talked about it, Tommy, and her reign after.
We talked about it during the Red Belt run analysis, which is relatively recently. You can go back to the archives and find it's the part one episode where we talk about that. You can find, you know, all these matches we just talked about, we go into more detail, which is good. Especially because we're not going to cover her Red Belt run too in depth here, but it's relevant to this story arc that we're talking about. Go back and listen to it because it goes through pretty much this entire year that we're going to be talking about. It's good supplementary material here on the Network, Stardom Road.
We fast forward to June 12th, the night that, of course, Tommy defended the title against Shuri in a match that, you know, you may have remembered. Saya Kamatani won the Cinderella tournament, adding another big accolade to the Queen's Quest world. While she did challenge Tam Nakano and come up short, it was another establishment of Saya as a top star in many ways. Giving Queen's Quest now, of course, Utami as the world champion, Saya Kamatani now as the heir to the Wonder of Stardom crown that she would win at the end of the year. Azumi, of course, had lost the high-speed title, and you start to see her and Momo settle into tag team action a lot throughout the year, including tag team title defenses. Which
Azumi around this time really felt primed to make that next step. Watching around this period, you were just waiting for her to make the leap into superstardom. And like now watching, it's like she's made that leap several times over. But you just saw like the years of waiting, the being primed by Io and Momo. It really started to click around this time, and it was just a joy to watch.
Yeah. We don't have an Azumi era to talk about, but there's a reason she's so important. The two original leaders set her up for such success once they left. To the point where, you know, there were people at one time calling for her to potentially be the leader once Momo left. Obviously, she was not going to be, but they created the possibility within one match, which we'll get to on next episode. Natsuko Tora would challenge Utami on July 4th, setting up the Oedo Tai Queen's Quest feud that would be put on the back burner following Tora's brutal injury in that match. But the back burner, not too long down the pipeline, just a couple more months, because kind of out of nowhere, Starlight Kid and Momo Watanabe would begin to feud with Momo challenging for the high-speed championship that happened back on November 3rd. It was very much a odd happening at the time, but it was something exciting. I very much remember this. Like, people were like, this is weird, but something for Momo that's different, right? She hadn't been doing a lot. Okay, maybe challenging for the high speed is something for her to go with, you know, and it would lead to a double count out, proving this is not over. This is just the beginning. It was a very physical match. You saw a different side of Momo for the first time in a long time that you
wanted. It fired her up, and it's what her character needed. She didn't want the high speed belt. You know, in her mind, all she cared about was the red belt. And this is something you'd see in her character periodically and pop up quite a bit, which created issues when she would then challenge for the white belt. And people would say, well, why is she challenging for the white belt? But like, she vehemently didn't want the high speed belt. And she's being goaded by Starlight Kid, but it made for an interesting dynamic here. And it worked wonderfully. And they worked really well here. She worked the high speed match really well to the point where I kind of wanted to see her do it a bit more because, yes, she's not a typical high-speed wrestler, but it just meant she was firing those kicks even quicker.
Yeah.
It worked.
That's something that Momo is so good at, like adjusting. And I just remember that match. It ends in a double countout, but it's like a great double countout because it was so heated. It was so fiery. Yep. Little did I know it would lead to my sadness, but it's fine. November 14th, Momo Oz would make it back to the Goddess of Stardom Tag League Final, but this time coming up short to FWC's Hazuki and Koguma. Here, that tag team has had a pretty good run since then. And this would, of course, be kind of the final feather in the cap of Momo's time with Queen's Quest, arguably the final feather cap of Momo. Anything. So we bring it to December 18th when everything ended. The Queen's Quest I loved was no more. Do we have to talk about this? Yeah, we do.
It's important if we're going to finish this episode to talk about what brings an end to the Momo Watanabe era. Unless you want this to be a 3-hour podcast where the final hour and a half is just dead silence with the occasional why did you take it from me, Rossi?
I'm happy you get it. And a loser must join the opposing unit match. Captain's Falls, by the way. So it's elimination, but if the captain's pin, match is over. It was, of course, when Momo and Starlight Kid played as the captains, of course, following up the high speed feud, and the loser must join the other faction. I always found this match to be very funny for me just because it was like Tommy's the world champion, just getting herself stuck in this high-speed title feud in many ways, but we know why it happened. Notably, I do want to add, Konami was also leaving. So there was another hole being added to a way to tie at the end of the year because, of course, Natsuko was gone. Konami was leaving due to health situation. That faction was not looking good. I'll tell you that. It was already bleak. It was looking real bleak. Like, the Starlight Kid part added a lot to it.
Yeah.
But they still needed another... They needed help. And that's when Momo...
Because Tora wasn't coming back till, what, October next year?
The next year, yeah. She tore pretty much everything in her knee. So, which is tough. That led to, of course, Momo Watanabe betraying Queen's Quest. When it came down to her and Azumi versus Starlight Kid, smashing a chair over Azumi's head, bringing an official end to the Momo Watanabe era of Queen's Quest and beginning her Black Peach era that we see today. Also ending the most successful era of Queen's Quest as well. At this time, notably, Utami is still World of Stardom champion. She would lose it just soon after, but I think that's worth noting. And then Sayakawa Tani would, of course, have her moment in the sun soon after that as well, which we'll get into all next episode.
She wasn't affected by this turn. Be her undoing.
I think it's very important to, think back to that moment. I remember it happening, and I remember going into that match. It was like, it makes sense for someone to leave Queen's Quest. And at the time, I don't know how many people are calling for Momo to be the one because she was the leader of the group. But when you think about it, when you think back about it and truly like look at the situation here, no one else besides Momo made sense. Because having Azumi and Starlight Kid in a time where they're both very much the high speed division and doing that made no sense. Sayakawa Tani was on the brink of winning the Wonder of Stardom Championship, and Utami was the world champion. So, you look back and you're like, well, this made sense. And as we talked about for the past year and a half at this point, it wasn't really all sunshine and rainbows for Momo, right? Unless you knew of what was going on backstage, she didn't feel like the leader. I do want to say though, because it's wrong to forget this, she did go to the finals with a 5-star just months before. So that is very important. She did have this late surge at the end of the year that kind of, I think, for many people, returned Momo to the glory that they remember and wanted her to reach. Obviously has the incredible, incredible match with Shuri in that 5-star final. But you still look back, even despite the 5-star stuff, despite the Momo Oz going to the final, it made the most sense.
Yeah, there was a real... there was a disappearance for Momo during this year. And outside of those moments of brilliance, because, yes, the five-star Grand Prix, she showed out. You know, you mentioned the Shuri match. That tournament was bookended by incredible Maimai performances, because let's not forget that the tournament was opened with her and Mayu Iwatani.
Yeah.
And that performance from her. And it was, it wasn't just Momo, you know, showing out. There was a renewed aggressiveness from her that we hadn't really seen since the white belt era. And I think that's what people were being reminded of, how good Momo was when she turned up and kind of reminded everyone that she could be the best wrestler in the world. It's just she wasn't necessarily being given the opportunity to showcase that, or maybe given the platform. I always felt like, you know, the Oedo Tai decision to turn her to Oedo Tai made sense. The question was, should she have been actively making that decision, or should she have been valiantly fighting for Queen's Quest and lost? You know, the decision to give her the active choice to, I want to join Oedo Tai, definitely made sense in giving her that new Black Peach persona. And you couldn't have done that with her just, you know, fighting for Queen's Quest and then having lost that.
Yeah.
Whether that was the right choice or not is just ultimately up to your decision. It's always awkward when someone fights hard in the course of a match, you know, aggressively fighting everyone in Oedo Tai, only to then wallop your best friend with a steel chair at the end, when you could have just instantly turned at the start of the match and saved fighting against all of your friends at the time. But that's the awkwardness of pro wrestling in terms of, you know, drama versus storytelling. That's a debate for another day.
That's the awkwardness of Momo Watanabe's Oedo Tai era. Are you kidding me? Yeah. We just saw it. We just saw the awkwardness that was kind of like that, you know? At least they're consistent, I guess. With
I stand by the decision to turn her. I think it was for the best. It's just maybe still hasn't unlocked the full potential of her. And that's the frustrating thing, because you still see deep down how good she can be.
Yeah.
We've never returned to that white belt era for her for one reason or another.
Yeah. Yeah. It's weird for me with the Momo stuff. I think, you know, I liked a lot of like what she did the year after with Starlight Kid, as you know, Black Desire and all that. For me, it started to fall off a little when Natsuko came back, though. I felt like Starlight Kid and Momo leading Oedo Tai worked a lot. The group felt fresher, felt more exciting. And then when she came back, when Natsuko came back, it just kind of like set us to where we are now, where it's like, I don't think anyone really loves Oedo Tai these days. I know I don't. I roll my eyes for most of their matches. It's like, all right, here we go. Doesn't help certain people are trying either. In that group, but it's like it's hard for me to see Momo feel inspired these days. Like it's almost like there's no reason for her to. And maybe that's been part of the problem for more than just now. It's been a while like that. But the thing is, we know Momo can turn it on when needed. That's the interesting part about Momo Watanabe in the year 2024. She's still very gifted, very talented, very young. She has still a long future ahead of her if she wants it. We'll see where we go there. But this is the end of the Momo Watanabe era of Queen's Quest. Next time around, we'll be back to talk the Utami Hayashishita era and the fallout from her leaving, and of course the mini Saya era and kind of the group dissolving to what it is now, which is a one person group that I'm not too sold on that will actually be a group yet, just based off of recent happenings and what they're doing with her. But we'll see. But we will talk Utami's era. That will be next episode and everything that follows that to present day. Trent, let the people know where they can find you, what you got going on, and anything else you have up your sleeve.
So you can follow me at Twitter/X at One Up Culture. Don't have too much actively in the works at the moment. I'm physically, well, that is not a word. Busy prepping a 5-star Grand Prix preview piece over at Razura. And because there's 28 people in that and I'm stupid enough to cover every single wrestler, I'm just busy trying to get all of that ready, getting graphics sorted for that, getting all the profiles and stuff written up for the wrestlers that have been announced. knowing that there's still, you know, I think four wrestlers still to be announced at this time. So that's sort of an in-progress thing. It will still be in progress going forward. And knowing that there's going to be stuff that will be announced and other things happening. So that's the main thing at the moment. So you won't see that for a little bit, but expect that at some point when closer to the tournament. There might be some other stuff coming, but yeah, follow me at One Up Culture for when stuff comes out, when I get around to it.
Good stuff, good stuff. Make sure you check it out. 5-star Grand Prix coming up, which means a lot of content all around the verse, I'm sure, from both of us. Always loves Trent's preview because he has decided that forever he will preview every wrestler. I don't do that with my 5-star preview. I try to give you all the extra other angles, which is, it's nice. It's almost like it's a two-parter type thing, even though that was never the intention. I wrote mine without knowing Trent first, and he wrote it, you know, it's just how it worked. Anyway.
We can plug each other's without it clashing. It's good.
Yeah, it's nice. You get something different. You get 28 wrestler descriptions on one, which is incredible to be good. And I think it'll be helpful once we know what X's are, though. Some X's might be funny for Trent to write about, depending where they come from. I thought about that the other day. It's like,
I might be doing the research along with each and every one of you.
I thought about that. I was like, that would be wicked. That some people that would just be very funny. Just you writing, but like, who the hell is this? Anyways, follow me at Scott E. Wrestling on Twitter. Check out the 5-star Joshi Show if you haven't already. That's my weekly Joshi podcast. Pretty big week in the world of Joshi. I will be previewing Margo Summer Destiny. That will probably be up by the time you're listening to this. That'll be up on YouTube or Fighting Media Network. Or, of course, you can listen to the full episode each and every week on Fight Game Media Network. You can also just look up the 5-star Joshi Show. That'll pop up too, anywhere you get your podcasts. This Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, I'll be doing a live review of Marigold Summer Destiny 2024 featuring the return of Io Sky to Japan, of course, for first time in 6 years and a month. She faces Tommy Hashishita as well as whatever the Marigold World Championship match is. I'm going to assume it's Julian Suri. As of this recording, we don't have that official word yet, but I'm just going to assume that's it. I'm assuming that's why we're waiting. We're getting that last second type thing, but that'll be a lot of fun. By then, I hope I have written an article about Io and Utami, if that interests you. I also wrote up a preview for that show. And this is a lot this time. I never have this much. Usually I'm like, whatever, just move on. You can check out my interview with Sari from Monday. She pretty much told Utami she's got to be a better wrestler if she wants to be the ace, which is funny. If that, you know, just trying to give something connected to this. Sari never holds back in my interviews, and I greatly appreciate it. That's the fourth one with her. And then by the time this is out, I'll have another interview out with Marigold's Misa Matsui. She talks about her time leaving Actress Girls, how she always wanted to leave Actress Girls, which is an interesting topic point. She was very honest, very open, very natural, something I'm very proud of. She was excellent, one of the best interviews I've done. So check that out as well. And we'll be back in 2 weeks time with Queen's Quest. You know what? And we're gonna toss in a little thoughts on Utami versus Io, because that's Queen's Quest, baby. Until next time, everybody, I'm Scott. That's Trent, and this was the Stardom Road Podcast, only on the Count Out Podcast Network. See ya!
This has been a Count Out Podcast.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Hey, have you guys heard of the new show on the Countout Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new Japan Pro Wrestling podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend, Rafe Hewson. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.